It might have seemed not very revealing, but it was actually a very good description of what I'll talk about. I'm glad to be here. It's always great to travel to Canada. I like coming here because you use the same electrical outlets that we do. And especially here because they put the outlets right on the table. It's a good time to have this workshop. Thank you, Leonid, for taking the initiative to make it happen. We're hearing about lots of recent progress. And naturally, we wonder what will be the impact of these developments, the practical impact. I'm taking the word practical, very broadly speaking, thinking long term. So our situation now is that the surface code has galvanized the experimental community, at least some experimentalists, who feel the time maybe has come to push ahead and see if we can really scale up quantum error correction and eventually large-scale quantum computing. So we have an approach, and the question is there a much better one? And so we need to try to find other approaches. In particular, one hopes there might be different schemes that will have much more reasonable overhead requirements, and that I would call that practical impact. It could have a big impact in the long run. And if that's the goal, we need more than just the existence of codes with nice properties and more than just efficient decoders. We really need to think about full-blown fault tolerance and what's the cost of doing logical operations. That's been discussed somewhat here, but it's something that we always have to have in our minds if our goal is to make quantum computing easier anyway, where we hope the research will eventually be heading. And of course, we have another approach, which is exciting, potentially to doing scalable quantum computing, topological quantum computing with anyons, and there are serious questions about whether that will really be practical in the long run. It's certainly very elegant. My expectation is that over time, the distinction between topological ideas used at the software level, like in the surface code, and topological ideas used at the hardware level, as in topological quantum computing with anyons, this distinction will blur, and topological ideas will naturally be incorporated into building better hardware and finding better protocols for doing full tolerance. I think there's a lot more room to explore using topological ideas to make quantum hardware work better. And there could be a lot more to that than just braiding anyons. Okay, so my title to be announced is Bravi Koenig and all that. So what does the title mean? Well, I think one of the interesting recent papers about topological codes is the one by Bravi and Koenig, in which they discussed, in the case of topological stabilizer codes, which logical operations we can do with constant depth circuits. And that's a natural question from the point of view of fault tolerance. What is a topological stabilizer code? It's an LDP C code, but it has geometrically local generators in some dimension, and it has a growing code distance. So if we let the system size scale up, we can get the distance to increase. And then if we consider a logical operation, which is realized by a constant depth circuit, because the depth is limited, there will be a limited spread in the errors. And in that sense, it's a nice way of thinking when we have a family of codes of increasing distance about what it could mean to be fault tolerant. And their main result was that if I have a constant depth circuit and it realizes a logical operation, a logical unitary, We can ask, what type of logical operation does it realize? And they said, if it's a topological stabilizer code in D dimensions, this would mean it would be contained in the level D of the Clifford hierarchy. I'll explain what that means in a minute. And we've been thinking, talking at Caltech recently in recent months about ways in which this result might be extended or applied. And actually, what I'm going to talk about is hardly at all my work. I'll tell you about some things that Fernando Pestowski and Benny Yoshida have recently done concerning extensions of this Brodsky-Koenig result. And I'm not sure how much time I'll have for this, but I'd also like to talk about some things that Pestowski, my student, Michael Beverland, and Robert Koenig have been working on. In the first case, that is the work of Pestowski and Yoshida, I'd like to describe in particular a version of the result that applies not just to topological stabilizer codes, but also topological subsystem codes. That means the gauge generators are geometrically local. And then I'll also mention briefly how we can state a stronger version of Brodsky-Koenig if we know some more about the code, in particular, if it has no string operators. And we know examples of three-dimensional codes with that property, which are topological stabilizer codes. And then the part that I'm not sure I'll be able to talk about in detail is the case where we go beyond stabilizer codes and talk about a class of codes that could, for example, be realized as commuting projector codes, which can be described in terms of topological quantum field theories. So in the case where the code space is realizing a TQFT, we can make a stronger statement of the sort that Robby and Koenig made. That's what I want to talk about. So I'll have to explain to you what they did, but I won't get to it right away. They talked about constant depth circuits. I'm going to talk for a while about something simpler, transversal operations, which can actually, I'll mean transversal in kind of a generalized sense, but it will include in particular your usual notion of transversal, in which I just have a product of single qubit unitaries acting on the qubit in the code blocks. And then we'll see that the reasoning that applies in that case can be easily extended, as they showed, to the case of a constant depth circuit if we have a topological family of codes with increasing code distance. So I want to talk about stabilizer codes. We've heard a lot about them already. So imagine I have some NKD stabilizer code. And let's suppose I can take all the qubits in the code block and I can partition the qubits in the code block into disjoint regions. So I can write the code block as a union of m different regions and then one more region, which I'll call R tilde. And what's special about these regions is that each one of the RIs is correctable. Well, correctable means that the code can correct erasure of that region. I could remove that region and still perform error correction successfully. So it'll certainly be correctable if the number of qubits in the region is less than d, the code distance. But there can be correctable sets which are larger than the distance as well. The distance is just the size of the smallest uncorrectable region that supports a logical operator in the stabilizer code. And so what I claim is, suppose I have a logical unitary. It maps the code space to itself. That's what I mean by logical. And it is transversal with respect to this partition. It's a product of unitaries, one acting on each of the correctable regions, and has no support on the region that I called R tilde. So I can write it as a tensor product of unitaries, one acting on each one of the regions, and then the identity on the rest, the region R tilde, the remaining code block. Okay, and I'll call this transversal with respect to the partition. No unitary spans the division between two elements of the partition, so it would include in particular the case where the unitary is transversal in the usual sense, that it's just a product of single qubit unitaries. Okay, and so in this case, I claim that the logical operation realized by the unitary is in level m minus 1 of the Clifford hierarchy, and m is the number of correctable regions in the partition. And now I guess I can tell you what the Clifford hierarchy is. So let's define it this way. P0 just means the identity. All of these things are defined up to a phase, actually. So I mean identity up to a phase. And P1 means poly operators. P2 means the Clifford operators. Let's say up to an overall phase that I don't care about. And recursively, I can define the Alph level as the set of unitaries which, when they act by conjugation on poly operators, give me an element of the next level down in the hierarchy. That has to be true for all of the poly operators. So in the case of Clifford, it means that when we act by conjugation, we get back another poly operator. So P2 means it maps by conjugation poly to poly. P3 means it maps by conjugation poly to Clifford, and so on. And this hierarchy has been very useful for organizing our ideas about fault-tolerant operations. Since we know the Clifford operations are not universal for quantum computation and form just a discrete subgroup of all the unitaries, but then if I add a element of the next level up, P3, which is not in the Clifford group, I can use that to complete a universal set if, for example, I can do all of the Clifford operations. So why is this claim true? Well, the key idea is something called the cleaning lemma, a very nice property for stabilizer codes, which I think was first discussed by Barbara and Sergey. And what the cleaning lemma says is that for a stabilizer code, if I have a correctable region, and consider any logical poly operator, that it's possible by multiplying by elements of the stabilizer to obtain a logically equivalent Pauli operator, it's equivalent because it differs just by multiplication by an element of the stabilizer, which preserves the code space, such that the operator P prime is cleaned on region R. It has no support on region R. So P prime unsupported on R. Or in other words, it's equal to the identity on R tensor product with something else, another Pauli operator. Well, a logical Pauli operator not supported on R. So why is it called the cleaning lemma? Because that's what it is. I have some region R. It's correctable. And there might be some logical Pauli which acts on R and also on the rest of the code block. But I can clean it up by applying elements to the stabilizer and move the support outside R, so the support is only on the complement of R. That's the cleaning lemma. And, well, let me say something which is a little bit pedantic, since it's obvious already that if I have a correctable region, that if I have a logical unitary which is supported on that region, it's got to be trivial, because if it were non-trivial, I could apply that unitary and then erase the block, and nobody would be able to correct the logical error that I've introduced. But let me look at this, because it'll be useful for what comes next, maybe, from the point of view of the cleaning lemma. So, for example, suppose I have a logical operator U which is supported on correctable R, and then I can consider any Pauli operator, but I can choose the cleaned version of that Pauli operator. So any logical Pauli with no support on R. So the unitary is equal to, say, U1 tensor identity, where U1 is supported on R, and the Pauli operator is equal to identity on region R tensored some Pauli operator on the rest. And so if I consider UP U inverse, U1 meets its inverse, and I'm left with just P. So this operator has the property that it commutes with any Pauli operator. That means it's got to be a multiple of the identity. The logical unitary U supported on the correctable set is just the identity up to a phase. So now let's statement in the case where M is equal to 1. Suppose I wanted to consider the case where the support of U is the union of two correctable regions. Okay. And so now I can write U, if it's transversal with respect to that partition into regions, it's U1 tensor U2, and then the identity on the rest, which I guess I called R tilde before. And then I can take any logical Pauli and I can clean it on any correctable region I want. Well, suppose I choose to clean it on R2. So I can write the logical Pauli as some physical Pauli operator on the first region, tensored identity on the second region, tensor some physical Pauli operator on the rest. And then if I take I guess I can raise and lower these things. I'm taking advantage of that. So I can consider U P U inverse P inverse. So if U is logical and P is a logical poly operator, this will be logical. But it's also going to be supported just on region one because I've gotten rid of the poly on region two. So U2 hits its inverse, and U doesn't have any support on the extra region R tilde. So P tilde meets its inverse. So this will be logical and supported on R1. But we already saw that a logical operator supported on a correctable region has to be just the identity up to a phase. So U, P, U inverse is, as a logical operator, a phase times the poly. And in fact, if I square this, I have U, P squared, U inverse equals phase squared. Poly squared, and the square of the poly is just a phase which commutes with anything. So this is equal to P squared. And so that means that the phase has to be plus or minus one. So the logical action of the unitary has to be such that when I conjugate a poly operator, I get the same poly operator up to a plus or minus sign. And that means that U up to a phase is poly. So it's in P1 of the Clifford hierarchy. And by the same reasoning, we can ratchet our way up the Clifford hierarchy inductively. Because I can always take advantage of the cleaning lemma to reduce the support to a union of one fewer correctable sets when I take the logical operator UP, U inverse, P inverse. Well, I'll just do it one more time and then you'll have the idea. It's just an inductive argument. So suppose U is logical and it's supported on a union of three correctable regions. And then I can consider P and I can clean it on the third region. And I can consider U, P, U inverse, P inverse, and say that's logical and supported. Forgot again to raise the blackboard. Supported on R1 union R2. And so, but we already know that that means it's equal to a phase times a poly. And so U P U inverse is equal to a phase of that poly times P, which is also a poly. So U acting by conjugation takes a poly operator to a poly operator. It's in P2, the second level of the Clifford hierarchy. Well, U is a logical P2 operator. Now, this argument isn't exactly the one, aside from the fact that I haven't come to constant depth yet, the one that Koenig and Bravi used. In a way, their argument was nicer, but a little bit more complicated. What was nicer about it was that their argument worked even in the case where I have a code deformation. I could consider the case where my unitary takes a code to some new code. This argument is really designed for the case where the unitary is logical for a fixed code, because I had to multiply together UP U inverse and P inverse. P inverse was a logical poly on C, but if U took C to C prime, then UP U inverse would be a logical poly on C prime, and the product wouldn't necessarily be logical. You can fix that up. But I like this because it's sort of the simplest version of the argument. And we'll see that we can generalize it in an interesting way. Now again, before talking about topological codes, we can use this argument applied to any code if we're interested in the case of transversal operations, in particular transversal with respect to a partition. So let me give an example of the family of quantum Reed-Muller codes. So fault-tolerant mavens love and know this family. It's a family of quantum codes which have distance 2 to the m minus 1 for m equal to some integer, 3 or greater. It just has one encoded qubit, and it has distance 3. But although its distance is not very big, it does have a partition into a small number of correctable regions. You're familiar with the m equals 3 case. That's just Steen's famous code. And if you know Steen's code, you probably know that I can take the logical operators to be just a tensor product of z's for the logical z and a tensor product of x's for the logical x. Now, I also know that there is a element of the stabilizer. Well, all the elements of the stabilizer or the generators can be chosen to be weight 4, like 4 x's and 3 i's. And I can use this element of the stabilizer to clean this logical operator to obtain an equivalent logical operator, which is cleaned on the first 4 qubits. And I have z stabilizers of exactly the same form with x support replaced by z. And so I can also clean the logical z so it's supported only on the last 3 qubits. So that means the first 4 qubits is a cleanable set. It's correctable. And so we can decompose this code block, even though 4 is larger than the code distance, which is 3, into correctable sets. 4 plus the remaining 3 qubits, well, those 3 qubits are certainly not correctable because I can support the logical operators there, but I can divide that up into 2 plus 1. So I actually have a partition into 3 correctable sets in this code. And because of the way these Reed-Muller codes are constructed recursively, there's a similar statement for every element of the family. Well, I was trying to show that for this code block of 7 qubits, I can partition the 7 qubits into 3 correctable sets. The first 4 qubits, although it contains 4 qubits and the code distance is only 3, is actually a correctable set because it's cleanable. Okay? And then I can take the remaining three and divide them up into two correctable sets, both with a number of qubits less than the distance, 2 plus 1. So now I have three sets. And according to our general argument, that means that any transversal operation has to be in P2, the Clifford group. And in fact, in the case of the 7-qubit code, we can do the whole Clifford group transversally, but we can't do anything else. So it sort of saturates our bound. We can do the Clifford group and nothing higher in the hierarchy than P2. And I want to make a similar statement for all the members of this family. Oh boy, I need to be taller. Oh yeah. Now, it would have been fun to jump, but it might have hurt. Yes, I'm getting good at this, huh? I've had a lot of practice with cleaning this. Well, I'm not as good at cleaning as I wish I were, but I keep trying. So what I was going to say about this Reed-Muller family is if I consider this code labeled by M, I can actually partition the code block into correctable sets of size 2 to the M minus 1, 2 to the M minus 2, and so on, down to 1. And so that's partition into M correctable sets. Because essentially, we can use this same idea, but at all different scales in the code block. And so that means that any transversal operation we can do, transversal with respect to this partition, but in particular, transversal in the sense of something we can do in depth one as a product of single qubit gates, it has to be in a PM minus one. But what you might know about these Reed-Muller codes is that for each one of these codes, we can do a transversal phase gate or a gate diagonal in the Z basis with eigenvalues I and e to the I pi over 2 to the m minus 2, which is an element of PM minus 1. The most famous example of that is the, which was mentioned, I think, earlier today, is the 15-qubit code, which has a P3 gate, a rotation by pi over 4 as a transversal operation. So this argument shows that for these codes, this is the best we could possibly do among operations that are transversal with respect to the partition. Okay. So now I'd like to talk about subsystem codes. Is there some corresponding statement we can make about subsystem codes and their transversal operations? I'll come to the constant depth case discussed by Brodny and Koenig in a minute. So what are subsystem codes? And this again is, I erased it by now, but this is something that Pestowski and Yoshida have recently done. Well, a subsystem code isn't really anything so scary. It's a stabilizer code, but where we divide the qubits into k protected or logical qubits and the rest, which we call gauge qubits. And the idea is we want to protect those logical qubits, the k, but we don't care at all about the gauge qubits, and it's fine with us if something bad happens to them. Now, if you're a coding theorist, gauge is a technical term used by physicists, which means stuff we don't care about. That's what the gauge qubits are. And now, when we have a subsystem code, we can distinguish between two types of logical operators. Which I'll call a bear and dressed. Well, if it's bear, that means it acts only on the logical qubits, the ones we care about, and acts trivially on the gauge qubits. And if it's dressed, that means it can act both on logical and gauge qubits. And there's a cleaning lemma which can be stated for the subsystem codes. I knew Gottesman was going to fall asleep, but around now. Which I think was pointed out originally by Gravi, like almost everything. So what does the cleaning lemma say? Well, the basis of it is this nice observation that I can consider all of the logical operators which are bare, which are independent and can be supported on a particular set, and I'll call that L bare for that set region R, and I can denote by L dress the number of independent dress logical operators, where I mean having independent action on the logical qubits, on the qubits we care about, and consider the number of such dressed logical operators that are independent supported on the complement of R. I'll write it this way, I guess, R super C. This is actually equal to 2k. In other words, it accounts for all of the independent poly operators acting on the k qubits, the generators of the logical poly group. That's everything. And so what does it mean? In this case, when we say that a set is correctable, we mean, again, that we can correct erasure. But that's the same as saying that there are no dress logical operators supported on that set. There's no logical operator on the set, even if we're allowed to simultaneously act on the gauge qubits in some way. So correctable, and in particular, we can define the distance. I remember there's a rope. Remind me to raise this one. I don't know. I already got started. I'm working on my cleaning lemma. Oh. So if it's correctable, if R is correctable, that means it supports no dress logical operators. But according to this nice complementarity between the bare and logical operators, that means its complement can support all of the bare logical poly operators. So that means that the set R is what we could call bare cleanable. So that means if I have some bare logical operator, I can always clean it up on R, and I can do that with elements of the stabilizer, okay? I don't need to use the gauge generators at all. I can find another bare logical operator, still not acting on the gauge qubits, which has the equivalent logical action and has no support on R. Okay, so by bare cleanable, I mean bare logical operator can be cleaned on R With the stabilizer. But there's a less stringent, and that would be true in particular if the size of the set is less than the distance, because that would mean it's correctable. It has no dressed logical operators. That would mean it's bare cleanable. But there's a less stringent notion of cleanability, which we can call dressed cleanability. And another way of saying what it means to be dressed cleanable is that it supports no bare logical operators. So L bare equals zero, that means that the number of dressed logical operators on the complement is everything. And that means the set is bare cleanable. Oh, no, dressed cleanable. That means we can take any dressed logical operator and we can clean it up with the gauge generators, okay? But in doing so, we might, although we'll have equivalent action on the logical system, we might change the action on the gauge qubits. So can clean on R with gauge generators. Okay, so now we can kind of go through the same story again. I just put all my chalk out of reach. There must be a right way to do this. Should have rehearsed. Running into time trouble too. Okay, so now what I claim is the following. I can take code block. And again, write it as a union of M regions and the rest. And suppose I have some dressed logical operator supported on these guys. But now I'm going to assume that R1 is correctable, hence bare cleanable. But the rest of the RJs, RIs, are only dressed cleanable. And then, I'm decomposing into the same number of sets as before. Before I had support on a union of M correctable sets. Now in the subsystem case, again, I have a partition into M sets for the support of the unitary. One of those is correctable, but the rest only have to be dressed cleanable. Not sure that answered the question. And then the conclusion is the same as before, that when I say it's dressed logical, what I mean is I can write it as a tensor product of some logical operator acting on the k qubits and some gauge unitary acting on the gauge qubits, and U logical will be an element of a PM minus one. Like before. Okay. The argument is almost the same.
a third board behind that too.
Yeah, how come I haven't been able to find that one? Oh, I'm doing the double left. Well, so the first thing is that if U is supported on correctable, that is bare cleanable, then again, U, like before, has to just be the identity times a phase. But I want to emphasize that wouldn't have worked if the set had only been dress cleanable. I broke my chalk. Now, wait a minute. Thought I left one up here. I don't. I can't read that, so I'm sure you can't. It said phase times identity. But if it had actually only been dress cleanable, then the conclusion would have been that you could be a poly operator. That's kind of obvious from the definitions, but being a pedantic guy, I'll belabor it a little bit. Suppose R1 were dress cleanable. So that would mean that we would have this unitary supported on R, which we could write as a logical part tensored with a gauge part. And I could consider a dress logical operator, which is a poly, and because the set is dress cleanable, I can clean it, so I can take that poly operator to have no support on R1. So it can be the identity tensor P tilde. And so again, I would be able to conclude, like I did before, that U P U inverse is equal to P. So that makes it look like U is just a multiple of the identity, except that now this is U logical, P logical, U logical inverse, tensored U gauge, P gauge, U gauge inverse. And so, although this is equal to P, that is the tensor product of P logical and P gauge, when I clean the region, I couldn't necessarily get rid of the gauge part. And so there could be compensating phases. There could be a phase here and a phase here. And that means I can only conclude that the logical operator is poly, not that it's a multiple of the identity. Okay? But the rest of the argument, which to save time, I guess I won't go through again, we can use in more or less the same form as before. Once we have dress cleanability, we can reduce the support by one by using the ability to clean the poly operator on one of the regions. I won't write it down again, but as before, I can write U inverse, P inverse, argue that it's logical and that it's supported on one less region. And by that argument, like we did before, I can ratchet my way inductively up the Clifford hierarchy and reach the conclusion, which I wrote down and probably erased because I forgot to raise the board again. I don't know. Oh, there's something. Oh, yeah, cool. Okay, so I got to worry about the time here. I haven't even gotten to the topological part. So why do I care about the difference between dress cleanability and The conclusion was, again, I can have support on the union of one bare cleanable region and M-1 dressed cleanable regions, and that means that the logical action of the unitary is level M-1 of the Clifford hierarchy. The same conclusion, so that in the case of a, reduces to our previous statement as a corollary, in the case of a stabilizer code where there's no distinction between dressed and bare cleanability. So that's the right way of generalizing it to subsystem codes. And we'll see in a minute why I care about that. Maybe, I don't know, you may or may not. But in the case of topological codes, well, what are they? Again, they're just quantum low-density parity check codes, but with geometrically local stabilizer generators. I'll come back to subsystem in a minute. So now we have an important property called the union lemma, which will come into play. And what it says is that if I have, we're back in subsystem codes, if I have two correctable sets which are sufficiently separated from one another, so now we're in D dimensions, D spatial dimensions, and geometrically local stabilizer generators, then as long as these two sets are separated by an amount which is greater than the diameter of the largest of my stabilizer generators, and if both are cleanable, their union is cleanable too. So if both are correctable, the union is correctable in the stabilizer code case. So union of separated correctable sets is correctable. What if it's a local subsystem code? What does that mean? Well, normally when we say local subsystem code, we mean that the gauge generators are geometrically local. But not necessarily the stabilizer generators. Okay, so now the union lemma isn't going to apply for correctable regions, right? Correctable means bare cleanable. So bare cleanable means I can clean with the stabilizer, okay? But if I have a union of two sets, yes, the gauge generators are geometrically local, but not the stabilizer generators. I guess I didn't quite make the close. I'm going too fast. I forgot to say, so what's the point? The point is that I can clean both sets independently with generators of the stabilizer, and they don't interfere with one another because no element of the stabilizer has action on both of the sets. So I can clean them independently. That's why the union is correctable. Sorry, I forgot to say that. But that's not going to work for a union of bare cleanable sets if the stabilizer isn't geometrically local. What does work is that a union of dressed cleanable sets, if they're sufficiently separated, separated by more than the diameter of the largest gauge generator, dressed cleanable sets will be dressed cleanable. Because now I'm cleaning them with the geometrically local gauge generators, and if they're far enough apart, I can clean the two sets independently with gauge generators. Okay. So what did Bravi and Koenig say? They said, there must be dozens I haven't used yet. They said, suppose you're in D dimensions. you can consider a kind of a fattened, I'll call it a fattened triangulation. And for this, we don't need Euclidean geometry, just that it's a d-dimensional manifold. Flattened triangulation, which you can, let's say we're in two dimensions, okay? Where I have blown up vertices and blown up edges. And faces that remain when I've removed those vertices and edges. And now I can think about taking a union of all these fattened vertices and all the fattened edges and the faces. And they will be sufficiently separated from one another that I choose them small enough compared to the distance, so each connected component is correctable, and the union will be correctable as well. So this means we've decomposed into D plus one correctable regions. So that's the conclusion in the stabilizer case. But if we're talking about a subsystem code, it would be D plus one dressed cleanable regions. So if I were really just talking about transversal, I haven't gotten to constant depth yet, with respect to the partition, that would already be enough as a consequence of the what we proved earlier to say that the transversal operation has to be in PD. The level of a Clifford hierarchy is one less than the number of elements of sets in the partition. But in this case, this is the special case of the theorem earlier where I don't have the bare cleanable region at all, only the dress cleanable regions. So if I considered an operation that was transversal with respect to the partition in the subsystem case, I would only be able to say PD plus one. Okay, well, I guess I'm not going to get to the TQFT part, obviously. Let me just say something about constant depth. And so again, part of what Ravi and Koenig had to observe is that if I want to take my inductive step, you know, if I want to say that I can clean well enough so that UP, U inverse, P inverse has support on one fewer region. Now, if I want to do some constant depth unitary, the unitary will increase the support of the poly operator P. So if each one of the gates has range R, and if the depth of the circuit is H, then the support is extended into a larger ball with its radius increased by RH. And so that means that if I want to make sure I don't have any support on R3, I'm going to have to clean my poly operator, not just on R3, but on a larger set, R3 extended. I clean the larger region, so the poly doesn't have any support on the larger region. Then I apply the constant depth circuit, and the support starts to crowd in on the original region. But I've cleaned it well enough so that after doing a circuit of specified depth, R3 is still clean. Okay, so I can use my inductive argument. I can get rid of the support on R3. And so even in the constant depth case, I can choose the system size large enough, so the distance is large enough, that even when I make the regions extended, I will have a union of regions that are far enough apart so that the union will stay correctable. Okay, and that works for the subsystem case too, if I want to reach this conclusion. But we'd like to do better than this for the subsystem case. The problem is we'd like to get one of our D plus one sets to be bare cleanable, not just dress cleanable. If we could say one of them is bare cleanable, then we'd be able to get a result as strong as Bravi and Koenigs and say that the we can only get to level D of the Clifford hierarchy with constant depth unitaries. For that, we need additional assumptions. So one of the things that Pestowski and Yoshida observe is that it will work if we'll have one bare cleanable plus D dress cleanable, and therefore level D of the Clifford hierarchy for a constant depth unitary if the code has an erasure threshold which means with high probability we can correct IID erasure occurring with probability epsilon as long as epsilon is less than some threshold erasure rate, which is positive. And in addition, we need the distance of the code not just to grow, so we can make it as large as we please, but it has to grow at a certain rate. Use them all. And all my erasers are out of reach. Oh, here, now I don't want to do that. And so we'll also need distance greater than some constant, which depends on the dimension and that erasure threshold, but not on the system size, times the log of the system size. So we need logarithmic growth of the distance. And then the idea is that we can divide our region up into big cells and consider this IID erasure process. And with some reasonable probability of order one, if we choose the cells large enough, each cell will contain a ball, a connected ball of some large constant radius that I can specify. I don't know where it's going to be in the region, but with reasonable probability, every cell will contain a ball of some specified constant size. And this is a correctable by assumption. With high probability, it's going to be correctable because there's a erasure threshold for the code. And so I can use this as my bare cleanable region. And therefore, there's other stuff that was also erased by that IID process. So this is a subset of what's been erased. That's certainly correctable. And then I can complete the Fatten triangulation, say, using these as my vertices. And in order for us to be able to have balls larger than some specified constant, where the constant is determined by the depth of the circuit we want to do and the range of the gauge generators, we have to have a sufficiently large distance so the cells will be correctable. And so in particular, the different fattened edges will all be correctable. That doesn't mean that their union is correctable, but the union will be dressed cleanable. So I'll have one bare cleanable set, D dress cleanable, and I can partition the code block into that disjoint union of regions. And that's enough to say that the logical operations done by constant depth circuits I have to be in PD. Yeah, so I'm sorry. Next natural question is, I'm already over time. What about, say, codes which are not stabilizer codes? An example of that would be a commuting projector code. An example of that would be a code that realizes topological quantum field theory. And one can say more powerful things than what Brabi and Koenig said in that case. In the two-dimensional case, it means that all of the logical states can be detected by string operators. And so we have to consider how a constant depth unitary will cause the string operators to evolve. And so I'll just, if I may, I'll just say one thing quickly. Now, suppose we're on the torus, periodically identified box. Then I have a bunch of generators of a generalized polygroup, which are string operators winding around one of the torus's cycles, and then another set of generalized poly operators associated with string operators that wind the other way. And instead of a cleaning lemma, we will have string deformation rules, which tell us, for example, that we can slide the strings along locally without changing their logical action. And the strings that wind around the same cycle will certainly correspond to commuting operators because we can deform the strings so they don't overlap and they act on disjoint sets. And then if I do a constant depth unitary, it will just cause the support of the string operator to widen, but only by a constant amount if it's a constant depth geometrically local circuit. And so the property that these guys winding around the same cycle commute with one another will be preserved. We'll still be able to deform the strings so they have disjoint support. And so we'll have a different generalized poly operator algebra, two abelian subgroups of the generalized poly group associated with the vertical string operators generated by vertical string operators winding around this cycle, and then commuting operators associated with the complementary cycle. And now, because when we apply a constant depth unitary, the property that this guy commutes with all the other vertical strings means that it's still going to be in the vertical poly algebra. And this guy will still be in the horizontal poly algebra. So we wind up concluding that constant depth means a restricted Clifford group, namely mapping one of these poly operators associated with a vertical string to another vertical string, and the horizontal strings to other horizontal strings. Okay, so there's more we'd like to understand. The non-abelian case, Robert's been working on that. One can also say interesting things about the restrictions on the power of constant depth. Oh, there's something else neat that I forgot to say because I didn't get to it, which is, what if there are no string operators? Suppose I have a three-dimensional code like Haas code. This is so simple, I can say it without Barbara getting really mad at me. You're talking next, you know. So suppose I have d dimensions, but I have no string operators. So then I can triangulate d minus one dimensions, and then I can extend each region in the extra dimension. But each one of those regions will still be correctable because those extended regions don't have any string operators. So if I have a d dimensional topological stabilizer code and there are no string operators, then I can cover with not d plus 1, but d correctable regions, okay? So that means I'm in p d minus 1. So that applies to Haas code, for example, or McNicky's code. McNitsky, how do you say that? Anyway, it applies to those three-dimensional codes we know that have energy barriers, which means in those codes, although they're three-dimensional, the constant depth unitaries would be limited to the Clifford group. So it's good that they have no string operators because it means that there's an energy barrier, and that's good for the memory time. But we pay a price, which is it limits what we can do with constant depth unitaries. Okay, sorry for going over time. David.
So these results about the constant depth circuits are really about constant depth local circuits.
Yeah, that's what I...
But if they were non-local, it would still be false.
Yeah, and so one of the things I was going to list as an open question is what if we consider some of these other constructions like the one we heard about this morning where we can use a graph to construct the code, then maybe we can still say interesting things about the power of you know, some classes of constant depth circuits.
But even in Euclidean geometry, I mean, you could have gates that are non-local, and there would still be, if you have a constant depth circuit with non-local gate, that's still fault tolerant.
Yeah.
And maybe you can get around this.
Yeah, so you're saying maybe you those non-geometrically local unitaries could beat this Clifford hierarchy constraint. I don't know.
You're very careful to say that these conditions only guarantee that you generate a subgroup of the deep Clifford group. Is there any hope of finding out when you get the entire deep level Clifford group?
Well, it's on a group, of course, beyond P2, but whether you can get anything at that level of the Clifford hierarchy? Well, you're greedy. I mean, I thought we were going to be satisfied with just something. Well, I don't think you can because, well, it's a little bit subtle because there's an order of limits issue, but constant depth unitaries, as long as you're careful to make the code big enough, we can compose them together and generate a group. But the beyond, you know, the second level, the you know, P3 is not a group. So I think we wind up generating some subgroup of P3. Isn't that right, Robert? So we can't get.
Well, like I mean, constant depth unitary will cause errors to spread.
Yeah.
Right. So if you just compose a bunch of them together, the errors will get worse and worse and worse. So
yeah.
In order to make it fault tolerant, you should do some of them and then do error correct and do some more.
Yeah, sure. But I think just as a statement about, but you're asking, is it possible that you could do everything in P3 with the constant depth circuit, say, in a d-dimensional?
Yeah, there's just too many things, or?
Yeah, I don't, I think, well, I guess it, I don't know, you have to think about, I think you have to define the question carefully.
Okay.